This week, it's one of my favorite segments. It's time for our quarterly Security Money Update. How'd the Security Weekly 25 Index fare during the pandemic? The answer might surprise you. In the Leadership and Communications section, I'm a CISO. What's next? The upside of virtual board meetings, the new cybersecurity priorities of 2020, and more. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show where we explore the business of security to improve the security of business. Your trusted source for actionable insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. Get ready for Business Security Week. Most breaches are caused by exploiting oversights in basic cybersecurity fundamentals, but complex hybrid multi-cloud infrastructures make cybersecurity hygiene challenging. Red Seal can help. It shows you what's on your network, how it's connected, and the associated risk across public cloud, private cloud, and physical environments. With Red Seal, you'll get control of your cybersecurity fundamentals so you can protect your organization from the inevitable attack vectors and reduce your cyber risk. For more information, visit securityweekly.com/Red Seal.
Welcome to Business Security Weekly. This is episode number 180, recorded July 13th, 2020. I am your host, Matt Alderman, here in Colorado. Joining me from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island is my co-host, Mr. Paul Asadorian.
Thanks, Matt. It's good to be here. I wish we could sample music without getting in trouble from the copyright police, because I'm torn between, like, Living in the City, money, 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 and Pink Floyd, like, money, ka-choom, ka-choom. The best I can do is short of having to be able the ability to play the sample without getting sued or takedown notice.
Right. Yeah, we don't need any lawsuits, that's for sure. And unfortunately, Jason can't join us today. I have some great articles in here I wanted his thoughts on, but he got pulled into a customer meeting, so just the two of us. We are looking for high-quality guest suggestions for all of our podcasts to fill our Q3 recording schedule. Submit your suggestions for guests by visiting securityweekly.com/guests and completing the form. We just reviewed them. We'll review them in a couple weeks. And once you get approved, Sam will reach out to get something coordinated. Also, register for our upcoming webcasts or virtual trainings by visiting securityweekly.com/webcasts or visit securityweekly.com/on-demand to view our previously recorded webcasts. All right, this is one of my favorite segments. I love updating kind of where we are from a market perspective. I spend a lot of time preparing for this segment because I literally go out to all the earnings reports. I go to the analyst ratings. I put everything into a big spreadsheet. And I try to summarize it for all of you on how's the security industry doing. Paul, you missed last quarter. And last quarter was right after the pandemic had started, right? We saw a huge drop in the market in late March. It recovered a little bit in early April when we did the segment 3 months ago. And what I thought was interesting is to look at that three-month time window, because there's been some very interesting things that have happened in that time frame. The first one is we didn't make any changes to the index. I thought I was going to have to, because remember, Forescout was in the middle of getting acquired. Mm-hmm. But as we all know, that deal fell through. So I didn't have to make actually any changes to the index itself, which made my prep time a little easier this quarter.
So Forescout's still public, as in not acquired. Gotcha.
Yeah, because there was a deal to take them back private. And if they came out of the public market, then I would have had to replace them with another security company. I know who I would replace them with, but they didn't come out because that entire deal structure fell through. We'll get into some of the results here in a second on why. But yeah, I didn't have to make any changes, which was good. Now, here's the interesting part. So on Friday, the 10th of July, both indexes closed at record highs. Both the NASDAQ closed at 10,617.44. That's a 60% increase in when I started the index. So when I started the index, this is almost 2 years ago now, Paul, I baselined our index and the NASDAQ. And so I've been tracking them ever since. So as of last Friday, the NASDAQ's up 60% from when we started the index, which I thought was interesting. I mean, the NASDAQ's been on this huge roll lately. There's been a lot of records, and it closed at a record high on Friday, and it will close at the rate it's going today at a record high as well today. What was interesting, though, is the Security Weekly 25 index also closed at a record high on Friday at 1437.23. So that's a 43.72% increase since I created the index almost 2 years ago. So what I think is surprising is, even though we're in the middle of this pandemic, both the NASDAQ and the security companies that are publicly held have actually had one heck of a rally the past 3 months.
That's really interesting, given the times. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You would think, wait, everything would be suppressed, but there's been actually some really good financial results from the security companies. Mm. And when I look at the earnings reports, what was announced in Q2 for the Q1. Now, remember, Q1 was mostly in the books before the pandemic hit, because that was March, right?
Right.
And it was kind of the like mid to end of March. Yeah. So most of the Q1 results were in.
Yeah. Yep.
Pretty close, right? Which means those announcements that came out of the earnings reports, what I think will be interesting is we're starting to enter earnings season again for these companies. So over the next month to 2 months, we will see how they did in Q2. And the question will be, when we do this again in October, where will the index be compared to where it is now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty interesting. So just some quick summary numbers. Revenue beat on average by 1.31%. Okay, it's not too bad. But earnings beat 55.4% earnings beat on average across the top 25 pure play cybersecurity companies. And so earnings is interesting because a lot of the companies that are in the index have gone IPO recently and have had negative earnings, which means they're still not profitable. And as you see earnings beat by these kind of numbers, what you're starting to see, I think, a little bit is the shift from negative earnings eventually into positive earnings and putting these companies back into profitability, which some of these companies, I think, need to do.
Is that typical, like post-IPO, to not meet earnings and then kind of come out of that? Is there like reasons for that, or...
Yeah, so what you'll typically see before a company goes IPO is a lot of investment in driving top-line revenue growth, and sometimes that's done in lieu of earnings, which means they're not profitable when they go IPO. Typically, the rule of thumb is when you go public, you have 12 to 18 months to show that progression towards profitability, which means you want to stop burning cash. You want to start moving towards positive earnings as part of your continued growth. In our space, I've seen over 24 months. You take Tenable, for example, which we know near and dear to our heart.
Mm-hmm.
They're still not profitable, and they've been on the public market now for a couple years. So they've had a longer runway than the rule of thumb, which is usually that 12 to 18 month timeline.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so they kind of vary across the board.
Mm.
Analyst ratings, the average analyst rating went up. It's still a weaker buy signal. It kind of sits in between a buy and a hold signal. So there's still some bullishness in the overall market across the board. The best rated stocks right now are Verint and Rapid7, followed by Varonis, which Verint and Rapid7 have been on. They were on this list last quarter as some of the best rated stocks.
And that's because of probably steady growth rather than CrowdStrike, which I feel like did that kind of like amazing growth rate in stock price. Anyhow, I haven't looked at the other numbers that support it, but that probably impacts the rating, I would imagine.
Yeah, it looks at where the stock currently is, what they think the longevity, they look at history, but they also look at the potential of these stocks, right? Verint was pretty beat up over the previous few quarters, and so the stock price had really fallen. So analysts look at it in its beat up form and say, well, I think it's a good buy now because of the price point it's at.
It can only go up from there. They're not going to take any more beatings. If they do, they're in big trouble, right?
At least you hope so, yes. Where Rapid7 has had very good, strong numbers the last few quarters, gaining momentum. And I'll get into some specifics in a little bit, because last quarter I looked at some of the stocks that had a potential strong upside and I made some recommendations. And now the interesting part is I actually measured where they are 90 days later. There's some interesting numbers in there. We'll get to that in a minute. The worst rated stock, SecureWorks, again, there's something about the MSSP market that the analysts don't like. I think it has to do a little bit with the amount of services that are in the mix compared to product.
Agreed.
And that the growth mix in a service-based company doesn't give you the same valuation. And so the analysts are just, they've been turned off by SecureWorks for a number of quarters. SecureWorks actually did pretty well. They actually beat on both top line and earnings, but the analysts just don't rate that stock very well. NetScout and Checkpoint are on the worst rated list, and NetScout had a major miss, which is why the whole acquisition deal kind of fell through with NetScout, and their stock has been very suppressed, but and the analysts have really rated
beat them
that
up
stock.
Over it, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the best performers last quarter, SailPoint and then CrowdStrike. Both of those companies have done really, really well in exceeding expectations from the analysts. SailPoint and CrowdStrike have been on the best performers list multiple quarters that I've been tracking them. Those are very, very solid companies right now in the space.
There's a question from the chat, Matt. So the InfoSec company is a good investment, at least as a whole, right, versus the NASDAQ as a whole, or, security companies being a basket, as he terms, or a subset of NASDAQ, right?
Yeah, I mean, the NASDAQ has still performed better overall than the security companies. Mm-hmm. 60% growth versus 43% growth. So the NASDAQ is still growing better. There are companies, I think, within the security area that are really, really good performers. And I'll highlight those here in a little bit when I talked about some of the upside. There are some stocks that have performed extremely well over the past 90 days, even maybe better than the NASDAQ as a whole. So I still think the security specialty within the NASDAQ still doesn't have the same growth potential as the entire NASDAQ, but right. There are some gems in there. Individual
yeah.
stocks.
That's yes. what I've kind of gathered from doing these segments too. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The worst performers, Forescout and then Verint. It's one of the reasons why Verint is rated, I think, by the analysts, is that they're expecting it to perform better than it has,
right.
And it hasn't. So its price, I think its stock price is suppressed. So it's why analysts think it's still a good buy. I guess.
Unless it continues to fall.
True. Or just stay flat.
Short of having a time machine.
Yeah.
Well, there's methods. I mean, obviously people have methods for, basically predicting, right? The stock's performance.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I got some great predictions. IPO wise is pretty quiet right now. Mm-hmm. There's no planned IPOs. I mean, there's still rumors about Tanium coming out sometime this year.
Yep.
I don't know. Until the S-1 gets filed, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
No mergers and acquisitions because the Forescout deal fell apart. We've talked about that. So
no mergers and acquisitions in public companies.
Correct.
Well, public companies have bought privately held companies.
Correct.
Right. But a public company has not been acquired, which would that takes them off of the or consolidates them in if the other company is public, right?
Yeah, exactly. So when Symantec got bought, right? Symantec was acquired by Broadcom.
Right.
The old Norton LifeLock product became NLock, right? And so sometimes you'll see a public company buy another public company and they get merged in.
Yep.
In our space, the traditional path we've seen is somebody coming in and buying a public company and taking it back private, like
right.
Forescout or Veracode or some of these other deals that have happened. Imperva was another one that happened like that. So you see those periodically. And so typically, I just track who's being acquired in the public space And are they going back private, or was it by another public company?
Now, what happens if you've invested in the stock of a publicly traded company and they get bought by, let's say, a private equity firm that takes them back private? What happens to your stock? You cash out, or do you have options?
Yeah. No, it typically gets
cashed
out.
In the literal sense, not.
Yeah, because what's going to happen? So here's what typically happens. Let's say Forescout got acquired for a premium or for whatever price, right? Mm-hmm. The stock usually goes up to that price because that's what it's worth. That's what's going to get bought out at.
Right, yep.
Yep, you give value to that. And then you basically sell your stock because when it rolls back in, the private equity firm is buying all that stock.
Is buying it. I got you. So you're basically forced to cash out at that point.
Basically, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Unless you're an insider, which has some different scenarios.
If you're an employee, right, yes, you probably get an option to retain your stock. And there's probably a lot of details behind that last sentence, but we'll spare the audience, right?
Yes. You never know. Sometimes it could be a good thing. Sometimes it could be a bad thing, by the way.
I remember you and I having a lot of those conversations at Tenable about what could happen, what is happening. Yeah.
Right. Should I buy my stock? Shouldn't I buy my stock? Yes. All those fun discussions. So last quarter, I identified seven stocks that had a really strong upside potential, all 40%+ upside from where they were. Number one on the list was Mimecast, had a upside potential of a little over 69%. In 90 days, it's increased by almost 32% in the stock price.
Wow.
And it was one of my three picks. Mm-hmm. So if you took my advice, I didn't even take my own advice, by the way. Mm. But if you took it, that stock's up almost 32% from where it was three months ago. FireEye had a 68% upside. It's up 19.5%. Rapid7, almost 54% upside. They're up almost 36%. Tenable had a 48.5% upside. They're up almost 40%. SailPoint, which was one of my picks, the upside potential is 47.16%. They're up 72% in 90 days. That stock has exceeded the upside expectations. So that would have been a huge bet. That would have been a great one.
I'm going to start calling you Kramer or something.
Mad money. Yeah, mad one way or another.
Matt's mad money.
Yep. CyberArk, 46% upside. They're up a little over 22%. And then Verint, remember, Verint had an upside of 42.94%, but they're only up 4% right now. Mm. And it's not one that I picked. I picked Mimecast at almost 32%. I picked SailPoint, which is 72%. And I picked CyberArk, which is up 22.35%. Yeah.
Awesome.
Some interesting numbers.
So the other question from the and I think you're going to address this now, right? Like how do you separate the high performers from the low performers? Is it niche management, like low debt? Like what like goes into a basic equation? I mean, there are people who do this for a living, right? Obviously, and some are very successful. Some probably aren't, right? But there's like art and science into this calculation of like when you buy and when you sell, right?
Yeah, it gets interesting, right? There's certain criteria I look at as an individual investor. I don't own any of the security stocks in this portfolio, primarily because I like dividends. Mm-hmm. And none of the security companies really pay a dividend. I think maybe one or two pay like a really like
small
1% dividend. It's super small, right? I think if somebody like a Qualys, for example, offered a dividend, I think their stock would continue to explode because Qualys has been a very steady performer when it comes to both revenue and earnings growth.
Yeah.
They've been profitable from day one. They always have growth. Yeah, maybe it's 15 to 20%, but they're consistent. And you tie that with a dividend, that would change my investment thesis.
And they seem to meet their earnings more often than not, right?
Correct. They do.
They've done a great job managing the company. I mean, to fire on all those cylinders, like you got to have a very well-managed company, right?
Exactly right. And so earnings, dividend would be part of it. Mm-hmm. Looking at revenue and earnings growth would be part of it. But I like companies that are really moving towards profitability. And there's a number of companies still in the Security Weekly 25 Index that don't have that profit yet. And I don't see a path to profitability for a few of these companies. And so that would limit how much I would want to jump into one of these stocks. Because if they can't hit profitability, does other growth slow down? Do they get the same valuation, et cetera? The other thing is you got to look at the market segment that they're in. The reason I picked companies like Mimecast, SailPoint, and CyberArk was in a pandemic that we had gone into 3 months ago, you knew email and email phishing attacks were going to go on the rise. So it puts Mimecast in a really good position, right? They're also cloud-based. You take CyberArk and SailPoint, which are on the identity side and privilege access side, knowing that identity plays a strong part of the protections in a remote workforce, right. I felt those three companies were in a better position than maybe some of the others to succeed. And yes, they actually did pretty well. So I use a bunch of different variables when I think about it. Management team could matter, right? We've talked about Palo Alto, Paul, on Enterprise Security Weekly, right? You and I have had this conversation about if people just understood what Palo Alto was doing, right? If they
and they're getting a little better at that too.
Yeah, if we understand what Prisma is and we understand what Cortex is and we understand what they're doing with these different acquisitions and management's out touting kind of the future of where Palo Alto is going, Palo Alto might be in a way better position than they are in the public market.
Agreed.
So,
but the effectiveness, and Michael from the chat was commenting, right? Like the effectiveness of the product or how good the product is often independent of how the stock is performing, right? It is a factor, but not the only factor, right? Vice versa, they could financially be performing very well. That doesn't mean they make the best product on the planet for, you know, enterprise security.
That is true. Look, sales and marketing is a lot of what drives the market in some respects from a valuation and a growth perspective.
Yep.
But at some point, the product has to perform or the growth rates can't continue because if people start to abandon
the product. At least some of the products have to perform, right? And that's when you get into these large publicly traded companies. There's more, I think in every single case, there's more than one product, right?
Yes. Well, there should be. They got to keep a revenue diversity. Think about Symantec before the Broadcom acquisition. They were struggling as a company. They really
you can have too many products, which is apparently the case, right? Because they actually split the products into separate companies.
I think they had a really big challenge between the consumer market and the enterprise market. Well, by selling the enterprise solution off to Broadcom, they got to double down the consumer side, and the NortonLifeLock product has actually outperformed the old Symantec stock. Because now they have a single focus on the consumer side to go after. It actually helped the NortonLifeLock side of the business, I think, by getting rid of the enterprise side.
And often our advice, it's interesting, if you go back to the beginnings of a company and a seed-funded company, our advice is oftentimes to focus on one problem, one solution on an aspect of it, right? And don't try and diversify too quickly, right? Gain your momentum, pick a lane that's going to be the fastest growth, right? And then start to diversify. That's usually our advice for most seed funding companies we meet with.
Yes. I mean, you have to build product market fit and you have to build and establish revenue in a market segment. Over time, as the company matures, though, you have to start looking at other revenue streams to continue to grow the portfolio. But there are challenges in sometimes doing too much in segmenting your customers and your market too much. And I think Symantec actually did aspects of that.
Right.
Palo Alto could fall into that trap, but I think what they're attempting to do with Prisma and Cortex is to really create additional revenue focus areas. But again, I'd like to see that story told better by Palo Alto than I currently hear it in the market.
And they've acquired companies in technology to round out that, in a big way to round out it. What we've done actually with some of our products is not necessarily new ones, right? But kind of variations on what we do with the core. So like there's different ways to basically have more things to sell potentially, right? Without going off into new markets. And there's a big difference, right? Because there's a lot more risk associated with going off into a new market. Maybe it's a new buyer persona That's risky. But if you're tuning your products internally, right, and just you're expanding your portfolio, but not necessarily stepping outside your swim lane, right, which is another company, ironically enough, that they're not they're not publicly traded.
No, swim lane's not. But yes, I think the challenge for a lot of organizations as they grow is when you move into a new market, it could be a completely different buyer persona, one that you're not tapped into, which yes. creates some struggles from a revenue generation standpoint. The closer you can stay to your persona buyers and mm-hmm. sell them additional things, the right. easier it is to usually get that adjacency revenue. Absolutely. Okay, so let's go into the private side, right? So we cover funding announcements on Enterprise Security Weekly. I like to summarize them in this segment. And some of the sources that I use are a little behind. I think with the pandemic, some of my sources are a little behind. So I don't have as complete numbers as I would normally have mm-hmm. in regular times. But here's some of the big funding announcements in Q2. ForgeRock took $93 million in a Series E. This is an identity play. Series E, $93 million. They've got a lot of money in. This is one company that probably at the verge of an IPO somewhere down the road. If the markets continue to stay strong, I think you could see a company like Attainium, a Sentinel One, a ForgeRock who have taken big late rounds mm-hmm. getting ready to go IPO. Those are some of the ones that I would really see as kind of that next set of potential IPOs coming into the market. Cyberbit took $70 million. This was partially a buyout from Elbit Systems, which is an Israeli company, and part investment. It was recognized as a Series B because Elbit had put some money into Cyberbit. This kind of extended that funding, but also did some buyouts. It was an interesting deal. Aqua Security took $30 million in a Series D. They're also getting up there too. I mean, if you think about Aqua in the container security space, Layered Insights out, Twistlock's out. So Aqua's really the next big one, and Sysdig, mm-hmm. both sitting there in the container security space, is those next two big companies. Orca Security took 25 in a Series A, and then Salt Security, who we know the Salt team pretty well, they took a $20 million Series A. So those were some of the big funding announcements in Q2. So there's still investment happening on the private side. I think it's slowed down a little bit, Paul, mm-hmm. but you're still seeing some deals getting done, which is good. It's a good sign mm-hmm. for our industry as people are still getting funded.
Awesome.
And then we had a few big acquisitions, Divvy Cloud by Rapid7. That puts them in the cloud space. Mm-hmm. I think that was a really interesting acquisition by Rapid7. Cloud Needy got acquired by Zscaler. So you see two kind of cloud security posture management companies get acquired last quarter mm-hmm. to public companies to expand their portfolio. Cloud security is a big piece. We'll cover that in the articles next. It's one of the big shifts in cybersecurity for 2020 is cloud security, and you see some interesting acquisitions there. CyberArk bought Idaptive, which we also covered on ESW, and then our good friends Peter Smith and the Edgewise team was also acquired by Zscaler. So Zscaler did something interesting last quarter. They acquired two of our sponsors.
Right. I don't know that's ever happened.
No, not in one company.
One single company has not bought two of our sponsors.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I thought that was really interesting. Absolutely. Let's see what else. Oh, I always try to identify a couple hot startups, Paul. And as you know, we've got, I think both of these will come on as sponsors. Secure Circle on the data security side. They are coming on. They should be on later this month. A really interesting startup in unstructured data security. You and I are really impressed with their technology.
Oh, yeah.
There'll be more coming with the Secure Circle folks soon. And then a good friend of ours previously with Javelin is over at Vicarious. I think they're doing some really interesting stuff there. I'm hoping they come over as well. But
Matt and I, too. I mean, we've met since RSA, dozens of companies evaluated. Many of those companies got to meet with us, sometimes more than once. And those are really the two that came out of our string of, you know, kind of meetings and evaluations as Matt and I's top picks.
Yeah, and if we think about our success rate here, Paul,
mm-hmm.
we brought some really like the Cloud Needies, the Javelins, the mm-hmm. Layered Insights that have come yep. on to be sponsors, all have successful paths to exits. These are probably two other ones that yep. hopefully Agreed. Follow the same path.
Yeah. Agreed.
Awesome. Any other questions from Discord that I should answer while we're in this segment? Okay. Good. Then that will wrap the segment. We'll take a quick break and then cover the leadership and communications articles for this week.
With over half of enterprise security budgets going towards detection and response in 2020, the challenge is investing in solutions that can migrate and scale with your business. ExtraHop helps security teams spot threats up to 95% faster and respond 60% more efficiently in hybrid and multi-cloud environments with cloud-native network detection and response. Kick the tires in the full product demo at securityweekly.com/ExtraHop. The question is simple. Have any of the systems on my network been compromised? The answer is harder than it should be. Enter AI Hunter. Active Countermeasures has automated and streamlined techniques used by the best pen testers and threat hunters in the industry to create AI Hunter, a network threat hunting solution that does the first pass of a hunt for you to identify systems that are most likely to be compromised and scores the results on a scale from 0 to 100. You can then research those systems in depth with AI Hunter. Focus your valuable time on the systems that need your expertise with AI Hunter. Sign up for a personal demo today at securityweekly.com/ACM.
Welcome back to Business Security Weekly. I am your host, Matt Alderman, joined by Paul Asadorian. Join the Security Weekly mailing list for webcasts, virtual training announcements, and to receive your personal invite to our Discord server by visiting securityweekly.com/subscribe and clicking the button to join the list. You can join the 170, 180 people online right now while we're doing the show, and almost 800 of your peers. Also, with all the recent changes to Black Hat and DEF CON, we realize we can keep doing what we do best, host virtual podcasts. I'm proud to announce Hacker Summer Camp 2020, a Security Weekly virtual live stream event, August 3rd to August 6th, 2020. Paul and I are going to be in studio all week, live streaming micro interviews, shows. If you want to reserve a slot now, visit securityweekly.com/summercamp2020. All the options are up there. We update that every week or so based on our availability. But if you guys, anybody wants to do a sponsored interview, come on and do sponsor a show with us. Go there.
I'm curious if you're going to drive or fly.
I am flying.
You are?
Because I can get back into Providence. Yeah, I checked the schedules this last weekend.
Starting to open up a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I can actually get... I couldn't in June.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we're in July, I can actually get to Providence. I can get there in two flights,
mm-hmm.
Or three, but two. If I go through Dulles, I can get there. So I am planning on flying in maybe the week before. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely going to be there the 3rd through the 6th.
Thought you were going to put in for a Security Weekly van or RV or something. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, do a cross-country trip.
What was it? John Madden used to do that, right? Because he was so traumatized by, players were in a plane crash or something like that.
So he only takes a bus.
Yeah, he took a bus everywhere.
Yeah. We could get, Kyle would love a minivan. We could get like a Security Weekly minivan and use that for all of our road trips. Yeah. Anybody who knows my son knows he loves sliding doors on the minivan. So. okay, let's get into some articles. I was going to go down funding articles. And I said, let's stay on the theme of leadership communication. Both sides were a little light this week, but I got access to the CISO platform. And so I'm starting to get some news feeds come in. Mm. And so this first article is a good follow-up article to the session we did with Mark French a few weeks back. Remember, Mark came on and shared his security ladders with us about how to progress your career in InfoSec. And we talked about, okay, I'm a CISO, now what? Where do I go next? So Gary Hayslip, who used to be a customer of ours at Tenable, and he's been with a few different security companies around. He was with Webroot prior to the acquisition. So, you know, Gary's pretty well known in the industry. He put a blog post out specifically about, I'm a CISO, what's next? And he lays out some of the other opportunities for a CISO to continue to move their career forward if they want to get out of the CISO track. So I thought it was really good because it tied into part of that discussion we had with Mark, which includes things like being a CIO, which is Jason's path, right? Jason is now the CIO and CISO at Carousel Industries. That was kind of a growth path for him. It could be chief technology officer, chief risk officer, chief product officer. So there's lots of different paths. And Gary lays out kind of a description of each of these pathways for the CISO, which I thought was a really interesting way to break it down for folks.
Yeah, I don't think there's a shortage of paths. I think you get to choose your own adventure once you're a CISO. We talked about all those various options, and it just depends on where you want to go. I think it's one that's not here that I think is interesting is CEO, right? Maybe co-founder and CEO, as we see oftentimes, right? You want to delve back into the startup kind of realm. I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, if you look at the guys from Signal Sciences, for example, right? Yeah. They were on the security DevOps side and went and created their own mm-hmm. company, right? And so that was a path for a few of them to move into kind of founder roles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that's a really interesting one.
Agreed.
Yeah. I had to cover this next article. Look, Qualys is a sponsor. I'm not going to make no bones about it. Ben Carr is a good friend. He used to report to me at Tenable. Ben just appointed the chief information security officer at Qualys. I think this is a great move for him. He's been on both sides of the fence, right? He's been on the vendor side. He's been on the commercial side, the enterprise side. And so kudos
to Ben. People
that
reported to you at Tenable seem to do pretty well, Matt.
Depends on who you talk to. But
well, John from works for Google Cloud now, right?
Yep.
And Ben.
John Cheerhart. Yeah.
Myself.
You.
I think we're all doing pretty good.
Yeah. I hope so. Look, I've had the pleasure to work with some great people, and these guys, they know what they're doing. They're smart. Ben and I actually had a phone call about this position. I'm like, dude, yeah, you should go do it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it happened.
That's good advice.
Also, for those who are interested, we actually interviewed Ben on this show, Business Security Weekly, number 120, 60 episodes ago. So anybody who wants to go see that interview with Ben, go check it out. We had an interesting discussion about the gaming industry, which was his previous role, vulnerability and prioritization and some of that stuff as a CISO. It's a great interview for anybody who wants to check it out. Okay, what CISO should tell the board about cybersecurity? So I think, as we all know, cybersecurity has taken a little more of a profile, especially with a lot of remote work and what's going on. And so there's a series of articles here that I pulled in this week around the board and really preparing the board, talking about aspects to the board. There's one here about reporting and metrics. I just thought it was interesting as the CISOs have to spend more time with the boards. What are some of the expectations? What are some of the things you have to be prepared for? And so these next three articles are really going to bring in aspects of the board level. So this first article is, what are the kind of the foundational elements for the board in cybersecurity? And so it kind of lays out some principles around, look, just give them the basics, right? Board members aren't very technical in most cases. They're usually financial folks. They could be in other leadership roles, but they may not have all the deep technical knowledge about security. So kind of stick to the basics and kind of level set your board and keep it at a really base level. Then it recommends talking about the process of security. A lot of times we want to gravitate towards products, not the process. And so with the board, talk about process. People, process, technology, right? And process typically helps you identify both the technology and the people resources you're going to need based on that process. And so, this article recommends kind of focus more on the process side. I have
point, I think spinning process as beneficial to the business. Just some of our previous conversations we've had on the shows, Matt, certainly speaks to, if we have implement these new processes hard, right? But if we do that, it allows us to move faster and more securely, right? And I think, you know, DevOps is one, and IT ops are adopting these processes that allow the business to move quickly while providing that aspect of security. But that aspect of security also, I think, speaks to performance and reliability as well. As I think this year especially, we've learned a lot of the techniques that we've been honing in on in security have positive impacts in other areas as well. Reliability, right?
Yeah. And here they really focus on monitoring, alerting, identification of potential attacks and breaches, right? Because if you think about what the board cares about, are we being breached? Is our data being breached? Do we have an incident that has... So what is the process to help monitor and alert and make sure we're not in a breach scenario? I think is something that the board really wants to understand. And that's a lot of process pieces, because how you're monitoring, how you're doing the alerting, et cetera, are all parts of those processes. Plus, you've got emerging threats, right? As the workforce move from on-prem to remote, What's the new risk profile look like? How are we going to address some of those potential emerging risks now that people aren't in our network anymore? How are we going to analyze that? What's the process for bringing those up to the board level, for example, and discussing those and making decisions, right? Those are all parts of it. One of the recommendations, I'm not sure I like this one, actually. It says reporting on specific incidents. I think incidents from maybe a lessons learned perspective are good, but I'm not sure you want to get into a lot of the details about an incident with the board members. I see that as potentially a trap that you kind of get in the weeds a little bit with the board members. I'm not sure that they fully could comprehend all aspects of the details. So maybe a lessons learned or something that recommendations that came out of it, maybe. Yeah,
it's hard. You're right. It's hard to describe an incident in a concise manner without delving into some of the technical details. I do like using an incident to highlight a strength and a weakness, right? If I had the time, I would choose one and be like, highlight what we're doing that's beneficial to the business. So highlight an incident that really wasn't an incident because we had certain things in place. And then talk about, well, where we did have more trouble and struggled and had a greater challenge was this incident. Therefore, here's the recommendation for, you know, improvement based on the lessons learned, you know, from both of those incidents, right? But that it does have a high potential of getting into the weeds.
Yeah. And that's what I don't want happening at the board level, because I think it opens a can of worms I don't think most people want to get into. And then the last tip here is obviously the report evolves. And it's true. I mean, what you report to the board is going to change over time and evolve. That ties into the second board article, which is, you know, what are some of those reporting things that you want to give to the board? Now, this is a sponsored article. I'm just going to warn you now. But I thought there were some interesting takeaways in here about some of the things that you should report up to the board. Because when you think about security metrics, we've talked about metrics in the past. We've actually talked about with a few CISOs that didn't use metrics. They use more the maturity on something like the NIST cybersecurity framework instead of getting into very specific metrics, for example. Graham Cantu Park a couple weeks ago said, look, I don't use base metrics. I use kind of more of a maturity discussion around the NIST cybersecurity framework with my board. I don't get into specific metrics. But if you do metrics, this article actually gave you some really interesting metrics. Now, just exclude their screenshots, but there are some really interesting things here, like how do I measure the potential overall business risk? How do I bring different elements together in my cybersecurity program? Can I build out kind of an overall risk view for the board? Where are some of the business units or systems or applications that might carry a little more risk? Not getting into the specifics of number of vulnerabilities, number of incidents, et cetera, but can you measure and show kind of a risk matrix or a risk graph that says these are where I think we have risks in the business? Because then it allows you to have a risk discussion with the board and then ways to mitigate that risk. So I thought that was an interesting way. The other one was a custom dashboard around asset inventory. You can't protect what you don't know. So how well do you know your critical assets in the environment, right? It kind of feeds into the risk dashboard above. If you don't have a good asset inventory and understand the criticality of assets, how are you actually going to do a really good job of identifying where the potential risk is in the business? And I think this is one area that a lot of organizations struggle with is, do I have a good asset inventory? And then the last one is, you know, can I show some trends? Like, last month we were here, this month we're here, this quarter we're, you know, show it over time. Do you see improvements, or do you see major shifts in different risks emerging? What does that mean from a reporting perspective? How are you trending? Because again, the board wants to see continuous improvement. So if you can demonstrate some of those trends, then you can show where improvement's happening, where it's not, and maybe that's a, you know, kind of a double click focus area on areas that you need to address with the board. So I thought there were some good tips in there.
Awesome. I don't have anything to add to that. You covered it nicely.
And then the last article is the upside of virtual board meetings, because again, you're not seeing a lot of in-person board meetings right now. And so this article from Harvard Business Review talks about some of the things you should think about when it comes to a virtual board meeting. And again, prior to any board meeting, if you're a CISO or another member of the board, there's some pre-work that has to be done. Back to the metrics discussion and what are you going to show the board? You know, make sure you kind of pull all that data together. Because now, in a virtual setting, how you display that information is going to be important. You're not in person anymore. And so you got to remember that being on a Zoom or a Skype link or a Teams link or whatever, you now have to figure out how to do that pre-work in a way that you can present it easily to everybody on the other end of the phone or on the other end of the link. So some pre-work there. It also gives you the ability to really shorten and focus the agenda. You can actually break up into subgroups. There's actually, I think one of the recommendations here is break it up into multiple sessions over a period of time. So maybe security has, you know, its focus on a day, and there is a very specific group, a session on cybersecurity and risk and all the metrics, which then might break out into a couple different working groups. But you can spread them out now. You don't have to do them all on that day. So maybe security gets a little more focus in a virtual board meeting, because now you can break it up into smaller sessions and get a little more focus. So just some really interesting tips here on how to drive a virtual board meeting.
I think it'd be interesting to replicate the dinner experience on a Zoom call.
I know. That's the one I couldn't figure out. I'm like, how do I do that? Right? I'm like, am I really going to sit there and eat in front of the
computer?
Zoom?
Yeah.
The computer.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. And, I would recommend not to do that.
Yeah. That's the one thing I can't do. Yeah. It's not good to watch me eat live. So that's.
Yeah. No, I don't one, think you want to broadcast yeah, no one wants to see anyone eat live.
Yep. Okay. Next article is on some of the emerging cybersecurity trends for the rest of 2020. Now, this is aspects from Gartner, and I thought there was some really the graphic in here. I tried to embed it into the I couldn't save it in the format that I wanted, but the graphic speaks to me where the market's moving, right? So Gartner says they're expecting spending on InfoSec to grow at about 2.4% to nearly $124 billion, but it had originally projected 8.7% growth. So First of all, we're going to see a shrink in growth by almost a factor of 4, which I think is interesting.
It's interesting.
Right?
That's just Gartner's prediction. But
correct.
How accurate has that been in the past?
It's been pretty accurate. Mm. And so I think they are definitely seeing a slowdown in spend. What is more interesting is the graphic right underneath it on where is the spending going to boost, right? So you're gonna boost spending in certain areas, and you're going to pull it back in other areas. And the top five, I think, are music to my ears.
Yep. It's app users, data, and cloud.
It's app user data.
And cloud crosses all those areas, right?
Exactly
in
right.
In addition to DevOps and, yeah.
Yep. Cloud security is number one. Data security, application security, identity access management, and then infrastructure protection are the top five boosts in spending, all above 5% growth over previous. Cloud security is a 33% increase in spend.
Well, because it's the shiny, shift. It's still the shiny new hotness, right? I mean, you know, operating systems, applications, web development, and then we'd had virtualization, and now it's really cloud, right? And that's where security is largely lacking and not understood well enough. So that's where we're going to see the growth.
Yep.
I think it follows the previous trends.
Oh, yeah.
In different
areas. And the biggest loser is network security equipment, down 12.6%. Because if I don't have employees in the office and I'm moving stuff to the cloud and I'm supporting remote, I don't have to make a bunch of network security investments.
Network security took a double whammy, right? In the advent of cloud and now work from home.
Yep, it definitely. And so these are the shifts you're seeing. And it'll be interesting. I mean, anybody in these top few spaces, this is why I love app user data. They transcend. Mm-hmm. Regardless of where the worker is, these are things you have to address as a security professional, and you're seeing it in the growth numbers too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my last article, I had to throw this one in there. Majority of security pros fed up with alert fatigue. We talk about it a lot. This is just some of the limitations of the SIEM. This is, again, it's a sponsored article, but I think what's interesting here is that is we continue to try to address the shift. We also have to think about how to provide better alerting capabilities, better false positive analysis. How do we get our arms around the SOC in a remote world? I think there's still a lot of challenges there. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how things play out over the next few months. But I don't think anybody's surprised with the numbers that are in this report that the SOC is just overwhelmed with alerts.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Always has been.
Always has been.
It's interesting. Innovations in technology have really just bred more alert fatigue because we get more alerts from more places.
Right. This is why
The analytics have picked up. And I think there's a subset of vendors that do allow you to cut through that sea of alerts, right? But it's still a subset.
Yeah, but you've now got to do correlation of other activities to weed out the false positives from the events that matter. Then you have to figure out how to prioritize those alerts in a way to really look for what should I really focus on and not focus on. I mean, a lot of the other topics that we talk about, but as a CISO, I mean, I think this gets challenging, right? It's because you don't want to burn out your SOC analysts. You want to provide them better processes, better analytics to help them really manage these alerts in an effective way, and then take in the whole aspect of the remote aspect of what's going on in the world. How do you make this easier to respond and address some of these alerts? So some good data in there. Again, it's a sponsored article, but I thought it was definitely something interesting for people to read.
Awesome.
And with that, I think that's it. Thanks, Paul, for joining me today. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening. And we'll see you next week on Business Security Weekly.